You are listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast, where we aim to dispel the myths, debunk the stories, and help people better understand the role of the doula in the 21st century. I am your host, Sophie Brigstock, owner of Nurturing Birth and course facilitator, and I invite you to grab a cuppa, pop on your headphones, and listen in as I chat to doulas, birth keepers, and nurturing birth friends about all things perinatal.
Welcome back to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast, everybody. So lovely to have you here. I'm really thrilled today to have Dee Bell with me. Dee is an IBCLC, a lactation consultant, and she runs the Infant Feeding Academy. And I'm really excited to dive into a conversation about infant feeding and the relationship between doulas, IBCLCs, and other feeding practitioners. So welcome, Dee.
Thank you so much, Sophie. It's so exciting to be here.
I just know already that we're going to have such a juicy conversation. I can't wait. But before we do, give us a sense of who you are. What do you do, and why do you do it?
Yeah. So my name's Dee, as you said, and I'm a midwife. I'm still a registered midwife, although I don't sort of practice anymore apart from postnatally. I'm a lactation consultant and also a specialist tongue-tie practitioner. And I left the NHS in 2015, mainly because I had a little one, and it's not a terribly family-friendly career to have, obviously being on shifts and things. But I had become a real specialist in infant feeding. And my main thing that I was really keen on doing was teaching, and teaching the midwives and teaching doctors, and really trying to up level and increase general knowledge around infant feeding, and sort of make some headway towards stopping the practices that really, you know, interfere with families meeting their feeding goals. So when I was no longer in, you know, working for the NHS, I really wanted to continue that. And was sort of teaching my own antenatal classes and active birth classes and sort of yoga and that kind of thing. I then went on to work at two clinics a week. I run a clinic in Brighton and a clinic in Tunbridge Wells, where I have my own clients see me face to face each week. I see about seven people a week, seven dyads. And then in about 2000, I founded the Infant Feeding Academy, which was really to get training out there into the hands of other people supporting families. Mm. So doulas, midwives, health visitors, doctors, anybody with an interest in helping families meet their infant feeding goals. Mm. And we've developed the academy to have some flagship programs training people up to be infant feeding coaches. I also train people in tongue tie assessment and sort of debunking the myths around tongue tie. That's another subject. and then I teach masterclasses. So really, it's just about getting up to date, really solid information into the hands of professionals supporting families and enabling those families to meet their goals in our culture. So it's not all about breastfeeding. It's about meeting the goals, you know, whatever that family's goals are, and not making mistakes that can sabotage what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm intrigued. You very specifically have called your business the Infant Feeding Academy. One of the things that I, in the doula world, that I hear or with clients is an assumption that someone like a lactation consultant is only going to be focused on breastfeeding, chest feeding, nursing. But that's not true, is it?
No, not at all. In fact, it's interesting because the title lactation consultant has been around for many years. You know, that's been a thing for I don't know how long, but more than 20 years. And I think it's probably came from where we were originally supporting breastfeeding. But I mean, I take an exam every 5 years, and we have to look at the study of feeding. It is infant feeding. And we're also kind of very culturally aware of, you know, the practices in the country you're in, the practices in, you know, sort of in cultures within that country as well, particularly now we've got same sex families, birthing people, the kind of move towards being aware of sort of trans families and everything. And therefore, we're just about supporting infants to feed in the way that the family want to meet their goals, but at the same time protecting the values around breast milk. Mm-hmm. So the difference perhaps with a lactation consultant versus maybe a midwife or somebody just supporting is we won't be, not that they promote formula, but we are there to protect sort of the transfer of any breast milk that is wanted. Yeah. But in my clinic, I mean, I see solely formula bottle feeding babies each week who may be having problems with colic or reflux, etc. And the role has very much developed into supporting, you know, the infant sort of microbiome, supporting infant behavior that goes on to, you know, sleep. Everything's connected, isn't it, with infant feeding, the success of feeding. So with the Infant Feeding Academy, the reason I chose to call it that was to make it much more accessible, make it more obvious to people that an infant feeding coach is available to support any form of feeding.
Yeah.
But the qualification is also as breastfeeding counsellor. But I feel if I was a mum who was giving bottles and formula, going to a breastfeeding counsellor, it seems sort of very ring-fenced, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in my role as an IBCLC, I mean, I'm supporting somebody who's having a surrogate, who's an intended parent, and they haven't breastfed before, and that's to do for induced lactation.
Yep.
And the sort of realities around mixed feeding and formula feeding as well.
Amazing. I love all of that. And you know, you and I both know all too well just how emotive the subject of infant feeding can be. Mm. So, yeah, the inclusivity of that feels really good. I just want to come back. You were talking about at the beginning the desire to work with other medics about practices that interfere with infant feeding. Mm. What did you mean by that?
Gosh,
is that a can of worms?
Yeah, this is huge. When I've as a midwife, I'm aware of sort of how, you know, the birth practices. And I was lucky enough to train and work in Brighton and started really my career as a community midwife. So I am very much sort of aware of sort of natural birth. That's kind of where I came from. And then I sort of started really studying around infant feeding and then seeing what we see as a really natural birth in our culture. We're still very much, babies are passed to other people. The staff maybe during a birth, overemphasize their role. So, as you know, around birth, I mean, it's about sort of, you know, if a family were having a cesarean section, there are lots of practices that are easier for the health care team, how we pass the baby from one to the other, putting the baby on the resuscitator to dry them, you know, the practices that make it easier for you to do your job as a medic, and not the best practice necessarily for the baby's natural instincts, for the parents. Instincts and wishes.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to support infant feeding to go the best way it possibly can, and this could be any form of feeding, what I really want is feeding to be the continuum straight after birth. What happens next is the continuation for the baby.
And you're talking about is the expectations, the innate biological expectations that a baby has when they are born, and that too often the process can be interfered by, you know, there can be intervention, can't there? So, you know, it might be that the cord is cut and a baby is whisked off to be dried and wrapped in a towel before being handed to a parent.
Exactly. And
that can really interfere with what the ideal, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think no matter what happens during the birth, you know, it may not have gone to plan in some way. There may have been a medical emergency. There may have been, you know, anything that may have happened.
Yeah.
what we want to do to support that baby and those parents, regardless of what's anything that's just happened, is get everything back to the biological norm, what nature intends. And that's for hormonal, that's for mood, that's for milk supply, that's for everyone's system being regulated. So although I talk about, you know, I'm infant feeding, really what I'm teaching is the biological norm. And should somebody actually decide for whatever reason they want to formula feed their baby, everything else around it, I would still be teaching them skin to skin, how long it takes for the baby to calm and rest on the, you know, chest of the parent, that kind of thing. You know, all of those things are about the baby's nervous system, microbiome, reflexes. And the practices that can happen around birth with the best will in the world are often have come about through training, have come about through hospital cultures
and habits, historic
practices and habit, absolutely habits. And I know the most wonderful community midwives that have supported, you know, say home births for 20 years, and they would consider themselves very, very natural. And when I then teach them, you know, basically the process around the first few hours after birth, they're still like, their jaw drops.
Yes.
And they realize what they may have been doing inadvertently. You know, maybe even, you know, sort of, I don't, obviously depends on the individual supporters, but even a mum or a sister or a doula, they may do certain things in thinking they're helping. Actually, when you're aware, you can't unknow this information once you know it.
Absolutely.
So it's all about really anybody supporting birth, enabling, as long as this is what's wanted by the parents, the baby to stay in uninterrupted contact as far as physically possible with the birthing parent and the nursing parent. If that's what's wanted, and but also given the choice. So for me, it's about informed choice.
Yes, I was just about to say, I mean, everything for us as doulas at Nurturing Birth is about informed decision-making. So like you say, if people have this information about biological norms and, you know, the benefits of certain practices, and they therefore want to make those decisions, you can support that till the cows come home. But if people are not aware of those things in the first place, or make assumptions that, oh, well, you know, this needs to happen or that needs to happen, or my baby must be weighed immediately it's born, for example, then, you know, there's very little we can do, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, that's 100% the thing. You know, it's just little things like, you know, you were talking about the baby's reflexes. They go through like sort of 9 different reflexes when they go skin to skin. I never use the word golden hour, because it always implants in people's mind there should be an hour, but that golden time post birth. And if you pick the baby up to weigh the baby after the baby's been on the chest for, say, 10 minutes, you interrupt the pattern and the baby has to start again. Often they're given time on the chest again, maybe for another 20 minutes, it still hasn't fed, but then mom or the parent then gets up and goes to the toilet, and then we start again. And it's just knowing those things. And I'll teach midwives, for instance, and discuss with the parents, are we going to be able to deliver the baby on skin to skin and leave it there and then weigh the baby after the baby has fed? Or should we weigh the baby immediately and then put the baby skin to skin? What we don't want is put the baby skin to skin and after a short period of time to weigh the baby, even, and then put it back again. People don't realize the interruption to the baby. But for instance, if you were to say to a new parent, you know, would you like your partner to have skin to skin if, for instance, you're having, you know, something like stitches or you're going to the bathroom? They're likely to say, oh, yes, of course. So that can get ticked down. Yeah, partner's going to have skin to skin. But if you say to them, are you aware that the baby needs to go through these processes? Would you like skin to skin to remain with you until after the first feed before anybody else has the baby skin to skin? They might say, oh, yeah, I didn't know that. Nobody told me that before. So it's when we do informed choice, and I know you know this as doulas, with midwives or, you know, any sort of medical staff, there's certain questions that get put down as informed choice. You know, would you like vitamin K? It's for this. And the parent says yes or no. but it's not truly informed choice.
No, that's
you
not.
Ask the question, you know, unless you ask the question giving sort of the different options and you finding out the person's knowledge base in the first place.
Yes.
I mean, would you like to hand express? No, not really. Do you know what I mean? And you know, it's like...
No, that sounds horrible. Thanks very much.
Yes. No, I don't. You know, and you could put down, oh, mother declines to learn to hand express. But if you were to say, you know, what do you know about this topic? This is why it might be useful. This is the option to learn it. Is that of interest to you?
Yeah.
And then they say, no, thank you. Then they're giving you a real no thank you, as opposed to...
Absolutely, absolutely right. Which brings us on very neatly to when I asked you before our call about what do you wish people knew, you had a very strong like response for me, which was
that in the first year of life, everything about babies is about feeding and digestion. So sleep, reflux, colic, all these things that we hear, it's all about feeding and digestion. So what I would really like people to know is that, you know, whilst everything gears up through the pregnancy and the birth, we need to really think about the feeding practices and what the goals are informed goals are post-birth, so that they can actually prepare for feeding and be aware that this is going to be, you know, a long-term thing.
Yeah.
And it's something that actually is quite within our, it's not within your control, you know, the outcome of everything, but how you feel about it, it's the same sort of with hypnobirthing. It's being in control of the choices you've made. So I would like people to know the choices there are, and that isn't breastfeeding or formula feeding.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, what are your goals and what do you need to know to achieve those goals?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the best thing that, you know, anyone can do is have what I call a feeding preferences plan.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to a birth plan. And it would be something that you go through with someone who's knowledgeable in that field. So it might be a lactation consultant. It might be a breastfeeding counselor, might be an infant feeding coach, somebody who is really knowledgeable, not just the tick list the midwives do.
Yeah.
Because the tick list that the midwives do is, have you had any thoughts, you know, towards breastfeeding or formula feeding? That's not.
Do you want to breastfeed? Tick box.
Yes. Yeah.
It's those closed questions, which, you know, as doulas, we talk so much about what effective listening is and what informed decision making is and signposting. And, you know, so much of it's about the open question.
Exactly.
And I've had conversations with midwives where they've said, I've got an appointment with somebody, let's say at 28 weeks, I've got a 20 minute window with that person. 17 minutes of that appointment are taken up with X, Y, and Z. It leaves me a maximum of 3 minutes to talk about infant feeding. I generally don't want to open that can of worms. So I, you know, I'm going to open that one, you know, ask that one question and then leave it. And I mean, that breaks my heart. It breaks my heart.
I mean, I would like, you know, I don't know how you sort of they fit it in any better, but if someone's giving private support, or for instance, like, you know, if someone's got a doula and they're going to have that chance to discuss their preferences antenatally, preferably, or quite quickly postnatally, it's, you know, sort of, you know, what were your initial thoughts? What do you know about feeding? What do you know about skin to skin? So someone might say, oh yes, I had that with my first child, you know, my husband was able to take his top off and cuddle the baby, or, you know, and you could say, oh, that, you know, that, okay, that's interesting, do you know this, do you know that? And they might say, oh, I didn't realize. I have a lot of people come to me because they've had a really traumatic first breast, you know, feeding experience.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, could be pumping, could be anything, but they're really traumatized by how it went the first time.
Yes.
And they've come for support the second time to avoid all of that happening again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it can be very upsetting for them when they actually hear some of these choices, you know,
oh,
and they're thinking, I never knew.
Yes.
I didn't know I could do that. And I didn't know I could do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I see a lot of people, you know, just making mistakes that they don't know. And also the professionals making them make those mistakes. Does that make sense?
It really does. And I mean, what you're saying, Dee, is so parallel with my experience as a doula. You know, yes, sometimes people come and approach me as a birth doula because they're first time pregnant and either they've heard how beneficial doula support can be, or they're very anxious, or there are some, you know, complex circumstances. But so often my clients have been second, third time parents who've had a really, really traumatic, difficult, unpleasant, challenging experience, mm-hmm. and they want something different. Mm-hmm. And those conversations that you have with people in the run-up to that subsequent birth are often so emotive. There's so much emotion. And when you start to deep dive, you start to explore, you start to signpost information, you start to ask those questions, those reflective questions, the stuff that comes up, the you know, the things that people don't know or didn't know, mm-hmm. wish they'd known, you know, you're really holding space for all of that.
So much so, because they then have you and they have this better experience. It's once they have the better experience, they actually may then mourn what happened before.
Totally.
Even more so, yeah. Because it's, you know, it's like, I didn't know I could hold my baby this long. Yeah. I didn't know that I had, I gave him to my husband because I was having stitches and they said I was on gas and air, so I had to.
Yeah.
And then when you say, oh, you know, you don't have to do that and it can be done this way and it can be done, then it can, you know, in some ways you're pointing out the loss of what they didn't have.
Absolutely.
And also some, you know, and some people just, I don't know, they just want to choose. And some people, you know, again, it's any choice we're given in life. If someone said, do you want to go to Spain? It's like, oh yeah, lovely. I'd like to go to Spain. But then if it turns out that they said, oh, did they not offer you Australia and Mexico? And you go, no, she just said, did I want to go to Spain? And I thought, yeah, why not? I'll go to Spain. You know? And it's that paternalistic way of giving choices that I found very hard. Within my parameters within the NHS. Mm. What I'm very sad about with the way I work now in my clinic is people come to me when they're absolutely desperate.
Yes.
And they're often on their last legs by the time they've made the appointment to see me in my clinic. And I am usually, I mean, like 99.99% able to fix quite complex cases if the parents are able to, you know, still have it in them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, by the time they get to me and I tell them sort of where we need to go next, it can just be too much.
Yeah.
So what I would like the parents to know beforehand would be, don't keep trying until you know, it's a bit like driving a car until it's broken. You know, as soon as you hear the knocking noise, get some help. So if it isn't coming naturally and easily, and you have a goal to breastfeed or mixed feed or whatever your goal is, and if it's not happening, don't see getting support as the last resort.
No.
What I want to do is prevent that pain and, you know, difficulties. We can get them to a better place much more quickly if we start quickly. If we can prevent, I mean, the people we've had contact with and been able to do sessions with antenatally is amazing. Like they sometimes book me postnatally, and we always do an antenatal session if it's like a second time mum who wants a postnatal session and the baby hasn't arrived yet. And I say, you might not need me, because I'm going to tell you so much in preparation that you may find you don't need me, but I'll be here afterwards should you need me for that support.
It sounds like you and I work very similarly. So we often, you know, most of the people coming on a doula course will talk about a birth plan. You know, they know that people want to create a birth plan, but very, very few of them have ever considered a postnatal preferences or plan. And I, you know, even if I'm only ever booked to work with people postnatally and they've come to me in pregnancy, I will always say to them, let's have one or two sessions before the baby comes. Let's have these conversations. Let's ask these questions. Let's give you the opportunity to go away and do some further exploration, be that talking to someone like you, or, you know, considering, I don't know, sleep or visitors or family or whatever it happens to be.
Mm.
But I think the postnatal planning is essential. It's setting yourself up for a really good start. And like you say, when things go downhill postnatally, and if they're not addressed quickly, things can really go downhill. Like momentum, you know, really builds, doesn't it? And, you know, going in when people are at an absolute rock bottom and in pain and exhausted and frazzled in their relationship and the baby's totally unsettled and screaming. And, you know, that's an awful lot to deal with. Which, had it been addressed before the birth, so different kind of thoughts, plans put in place, and or, you know, we think there might be an issue brewing here, let's get some support, you know, early on.
Just makes and I think, a world of difference. You know, there's always that joke, you know, comparison made about how much effort people put into planning, you know, getting the right pram, you know, and the money. And I know that's kind of like almost like a sort of well-known kind of joke, but it's true. But it seems, you know, we think so much about the pregnancy and then how the birth is going to be, but the longest bit is the next 18 years. Yes. And I'm very, very pro when I have you know, tired parents come in, I talk about, you know, and they're like, oh, I don't know what, you know, I can't possibly follow this feeding plan because, you know, my partner goes back to work next week. And I say, could you afford a few hours with a postnatal doula, maybe twice a week? And they're like, oh, you know, and I said, it's not that expensive. You know, it's not as expensive as you think. Yeah. And we're talking about your mental health. We're talking about your, you know, ability to cope. And it always surprises me that in our culture, we're not more aware and we need to become, I think, more supportive of having these postnatal support structures in place, not just popping to a drop-in. That if you're feeling down and frazzled and tired, the thought of getting this baby ready to go down to the drop-in is usually too much. But an awareness that postnatal doula may come in, and I say they may just, you may go to bed and they'll hold the baby and you don't have to make them a cup of tea and chat to them, you know, because they're paid to be there, or you hold the baby and they'll make you a cup of tea and a sandwich and you know, and again, and even when breastfeeding's going well, I would recommend that anyone had a lactation consultation, you know, because it's going well, because there's always things that you can improve and make sure that they don't end up on their last legs at an appointment with a specialist like me, you know. Yeah. Getting it right in those first 2 weeks, I would say those first 2 weeks are, you know, sort of how you set up how that first year is going to go, you know, and whether or not we're trying five different bottles and Infracol, and now we're looking at a reflux specialist, and oh, maybe the baby's tongue-tied. And, you know, it's actually about having that birth culture in the first 2 weeks, just about nurturing, about being at home, being, you know, in bed, maybe being half-dressed with a baby.
It's, I mean, you know, this is so much of a bigger topic, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's so much of it is about how we treat, you know, postnatal mothers particularly, and how we really don't honour the process of birth, pregnancy and birthing babies in the way that other cultures do, and that we have become a very materialistic society. We've become very, very focused on the pram or the kit or the nursery or getting back in the size 6 jeans and how we look on social media and all of those things, none of which actually support our mental health, our emotional well-being, our postnatal recovery. So I totally agree with you. And I wish people wouldn't buy prams, actually, certainly not to begin with.
Slings, you know,
you're not going to need one for the first few weeks. If you could invest the kind of money or even half of the money that you would put into a pram into practical and emotional support and informational support, then I think you're setting yourself up for a far, far better postnatal period. And obviously postnatal is not just the first couple of weeks. We're talking about weeks and months and sometimes years. And having that good start, just, you know, it makes such a difference.
Absolutely. But I think in terms of infant feeding, firstly, we've got the expectations of those first 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it's difficult for me to sort of to describe to you what I mean without going into it all in so much detail, but there are a lot of, you know, professionals think they know because they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And for me, because I have the background as a midwife, all of the good things and all of the things I disapprove of in terms of supporting these little human monkeys, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've seen both sides. I know what it's like to be in a theater with a cesarean and what needs to happen on the one hand, and also what is, as you said, just habit and how we do it and doesn't need to happen. Yeah. You know, because if you can do it one way in one hospital, there's no excuse that you have to say, oh, but we have to do it this way in our hospital. No. You know, if babies need hats on, they either do or they don't. Why would they need a hat on in one hospital and not in another hospital? You know what I mean? Yeah. So there are so many practices that if we can make sure the people that are supporting the parents are really aware of all these choices, and then the parents are aware, you know, why am I saying take the hat off? You know, it interferes with the baby's feeding instincts, it interferes with the mother smelling the baby's head, you know. But if you didn't know that, and a midwife says, oh, should we just pop a little hat on you, mum goes, oh yes, okay, it's in my bag. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Again, it's not informed choice, is it? It's different. Yeah. Now, if I was to come in and I said, it's really cold in this room, I'm, you know, I don't want to take baby off your chest, shall we put a hat on just for now because it's a little bit cold? You know what I mean? That's a different reason.
Yes.
That's my passion, is trying to increase that knowledge of what happens in the first 24 hours and what could happen and what should happen and what we want to avoid happening. And then really getting it right in the first 2 weeks, because that's what, you know, sets up the future. And as you know, with birth, I mean, you know, your birth stories, whether you have one child or seven children, you know, every person that's given birth can tell the story for the next, and they will, the next 60, 70 years. But feeding is the same, you know, how people feel about how they fed their baby is the same for the next 60 or 70 years. And it's the bit that in some ways lasts longer, because the postnatal period is a whole long period. It's not just the short period of birth. So, you know, it's about satisfaction, isn't it? And that becoming parents, and how they feel about that, and the impact on everybody in the family. If you've got a baby struggling to feed, a nursing parent struggling to feed the baby, the impact on the other parent's mental health, you know, it affects everything.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I feel like we could carry on talking for days, honestly. Dear, we've just scratched the surface here, but I'm going to draw it to a close for now. So firstly, you're suggesting that people make a feeding preferences plan before birth. How would people best go about doing that?
So I would say it's reaching out to somebody who is trained in infant feeding with the right training. We train our infant feeding coaches, and we have one that's specific to the Infant Feeding Academy. But you could make up your, you know, your own generic one. But you do need to be consulting the parents. We need to consult somebody that has that, you know, that's seen birth, that knows what goes on, so that it's really informed. To be really aware that it isn't just formula or breast. That's the choice, you know, but understand how to achieve. And I'd like to sort of, I'm just trying to think of a way of sharing with you, sharing with sort of Nurturing Birth, perhaps sort of an abridged version of the plan that we teach in some way, so people can have an idea of that.
Yeah.
But just having somebody go through the process of the whole of the birth and really focusing on the first week. And, you know, what are the choices that are available, and then being a chance to discuss those with somebody that's informed.
Yes. And just for clarity's sake, when you talk about someone who's trained, what do you mean? Like, who should people look out for?
Okay. So, yeah. So there are lots of people that support feeding out there. And there's only one protected title, which is a international board certified lactation consultant. So when you go to an IBCLC, you know that you're getting somebody who has the highest level of infant feeding training. However, also, you know, breastfeeding counsellors, Lelesch League, infant feeding coaches. They are all sort of highly special, you know, trained and specialized as well. The only thing I would say is if you go to somebody, for instance, like an NCT teacher who teaches breastfeeding, my slight bugbear is they have never been in a hospital necessarily, you know what I mean? And they're often, you know, I've seen so many breastfeeding 2-hour sessions taught that you know, that don't have that big a view. So I would say somebody that has done a specialist course. So making sure that whoever you consult has had, you know, specialist training, because a midwife, you know, midwives, although they deal with mothers and babies, some of them have had specialist additional training, but many of them just have the bare minimum. So it's a lactation consultant at the absolute top level.
Yeah, that's often the biggest revelation for doulas on a course. There is an assumption that midwives are the people to go to around infant feeding. And, you know, what I'm hearing you say, and I've experienced myself, is that many of them haven't had additional specialised breastfeeding or infant feeding training, so it can be quite limited. I'm a breastfeeding counsellor and have spent 10 years volunteering on the postnatal wards, and regularly have met people who've said, I've spoken to 5 different midwives and they've all said completely different things. So what I'm hearing you say is go to someone who's trained, a breastfeeding counsellor, an IBCLC, to talk those things through. Brilliant, fantastic, thank you so much, Dee. So how can people find out more about you or contact you?
So I would say the best way to see what we're up to at the Infant Feeding Academy is on Instagram. So that is Infant Feeding Academy, simply Infant Feeding Academy. I had to change the name after my other account got hacked. So I have to make sure I get it right. So Infant Feeding Academy. And then I'm always basically posting. We've got a free workshop coming up. That will be the 22nd of June, if that's still applicable. I teach masterclasses for people that are already trained. So if someone like yourself, you know, who already has quite a good grounding, we do masterclasses about slow weight gain, induced lactation, low milk supply, and they go on throughout the year. And if people are interested in training to become an infant feeding coach with us at the academy, then just simply look us up, Google us and I'll come up, or Dee Bell, and you'll see all of the work that I do.
Wonderful. Oh, it's been an absolute joy, Dee, and I hope all goes well, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you so much, Sophie. See you soon.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Nurturing Birth Doula podcast. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you've got any questions or any feedback, don't hesitate to come back to us. It's info@nurturingbirth.co.uk. And do follow us on social media @nurturing_birth on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. Please do give us a review if you've enjoyed this episode. We are on Spotify, we're on Apple, and we would love to hear your thoughts about any future episodes you'd like to hear. So do get in touch. Thanks for listening. Bye.